respect and information is what you get from the Progressive Radio Network and Warrior Connection. It's extremely important for all veterans to have the information necessary to survive and, more important, to thrive once they get out of the military or while they're still in the military. And so we're going to continue on. We're pre-recording this on Wednesday. That's the day before Thanksgiving. Tomorrow, Thursday, will be Thanksgiving. And for me, it's a very meaningful day. And I thought, what would we do on this is bring my cousin Bonnie Rocky Tennis back on. We'll talk about poetry, talk about writing, talk about fun stuff and family stuff. I mean, the two of us have, since childhood, she's a couple years older than I am, so she's known me since before I knew me, which is kind of neat to say. Bonnie, welcome back to Warrior Connection.
Well, thank you, and thank you for asking me back. It's always fun to visit with you on the radio.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. I mean, we've done your poetry before. I mean, you set it all up, and we're going to revisit it again with Bob Dylan. I mean, that was an incredible program back in April, and now he's won the Nobel Prize.
Yes, he has. I think the people that were on with us, John and Brad, they're all willing to come back, so we'll have to organize that, too.
That's pretty unique. I mean, Warrior Connection has a coup on Bob Dylan. It doesn't get any better than that.
No, it doesn't. Yeah,
you know,
I'm pretty proud of him because, of course, he was a Minnesota person and one of our own. So, you know, that makes it even more special.
Yeah, no matter what you feel like back home. I mean, the days when we were all growing up and together, I mean, I spent my summers on the farm up there and with our, you know, our grandma and our aunts and uncles and your parents. I mean, it was some incredible, very, very different days back in the 50s, the ends of the 40s, the 50s and 60s, and where we are today, isn't it?
Yes, and I sometimes wish we were back there, but there are good things about today, too, but that closeness is gone because everybody's scattered. But as long as people like you and I could keep it going, well, that helps, you know?
Yeah, we're going to try it. You wrote a poem. For me, as you know, and again, this is our family lore and everything, I went to Vietnam on the second time going to Vietnam on Thanksgiving Day in 1969, just hours after our grandma died and after I talked to her the last time. And then I went back to, got recalled again to active duty during Desert Storm on Thanksgiving Day and got off active duty for the last time after I was a depleted uranium project director on Thanksgiving Day in 1995. It's hard to believe so many years and so many events.
I know. Isn't that incredible? And now our kids have grown up and have their own families, and we have grandkids that are growing up. And you wonder where the time went. And we just are blessed, Doug, because we've done pretty well.
You know, and you wrote a poem that kind of sums this all up. And I'm going to read this and see if I do it justice, because it's how we feel. It's how all of us felt when we got deployed, whether it was Vietnam or to Germany or Japan. I mean, I just got a set of books on Pearl Harbor, and, you know, my dad, your uncle, obviously, you know, he was, yeah, there. That's all part of family stories again. But this poem is So Far Away You Are. So far away you are, with miles between us since you moved away. But if measurements were made by how we feel, and distances were but a state of mind, our hearts would shorten them, the miles. And you were really never gone at all.
Yeah, doesn't it seem like we pick up where we left off, don't we, Doug?
Yeah, it does. And I mean, and that's extremely important. I mean, the great joys and everything. And again, when we were growing up, back at that time on our side of the family, all our aunts and uncles, our families, our, you know, our grandparents, they were all right there together. They hadn't all spread to the four winds yet like we did when all of us cousins grew up. And the same thing on my mom's side of the family. When we were growing up, all of the brothers and sisters were right together. But then when we got to our generation, we started scattering to the four winds. And, I mean, now we got cousins all around the world, from Hawaii to Minnesota to Virginia. I mean, where in Texas?
Yeah, we do. And it seems impossible. And some of them I've lost contact with. Maybe you haven't, but I have. But here's... I got to read this to you, too, because this fits for today and for Thanksgiving and the holidays coming up. It's called Yesterday. I don't know if you got this one, but I wrote it about a year ago about yesterday because I was feeling nostalgic and longing for some of those old days, and it's addressed to yesterday, you know, as a person. It's kind of like a metaphor there. Yesterday, so quietly, so gently, so softly as a feather, you floated in the wind under a lemon-colored sky that embellished an ocean blue sky. Lemon-colored sun, I guess, that embellished an ocean blue sky. Then it's as if a magician's hand and some abracadabra made you disappear far into the deepest night on the other side of the world. Yesterday, we can't touch you even when we try. Sometimes we can't remember you even. Your speedy exit on that fast track you rode baffled us. And years passed and passed and passed, giving us today and us shaking our heads saying all those years just flew by. They seem like yesterday.
That's kind of neat. I mean, you know, I mean, you've been a psych nurse. You've been an English teacher. I mean, we had one of your former students on our program before who's now a very extraordinarily successful musician. And it just, how does this all come about? I mean, we can see, obviously, one of the things that we can do, and we've had writers on the program before. We did last week with John on, you know, his book on Vietnam, The Hard Rain Fell. But writing frees the soul, doesn't it?
It does. And you have to be willing to share it. Yeah, you know, you have to be able, willing to share all those feelings, whether they're happy, sad, dark, or deep, or secret, or whatever. But, you know, when you do, you find out that everybody kind of thinks and feels the same way, and you're not alone in the world, you know?
And some
it's just like that. That little story you wrote about that Christmas in Nam, every time I read it, I get chills. And I just do not have a clue. And we have people in that situation today. What it feels like to go on to go to war on Thanksgiving or Christmas or your birthday or any other special day of the year. It's something that most people are fortunate, probably, maybe unfortunate, that they've never experienced. And, you know, I experienced going to being charge nurse at Christmas and Thanksgiving and everything, and that wasn't so pleasant because, you know, mentally ill people are ill, you know. But being that far away and going out, and it's so hard for me to fathom, but I know it's necessary, and it's a beautiful story, that one.
Yeah.
You know, when you explain how you go to church and you're singing Silent Night and there's false snow falling in this hot, humid place, and then you get in the plane and you go bombing. I can't. It must have been really hard, Doug.
It was. Well, I mean, why don't I read it? I've got it right here. I mean, this was published at Western Illinois University in Veterans Voices.
Yeah,
that's an incredible program.
That's so appropriate. No, and then so go ahead. I want to hear you read it.
Okay, and this is all comes about because Thanksgiving and Christmas are all intertwined for me. I mean, for all military. Christmas 1970, a time without peace. As our nation celebrates Christmas once more with Americans in harm's way, my thoughts return to an experience so long ago in a distant land during a previous war. Although a Christmas truce had been announced formally and Americans at home, then referred to as the world, thought there would be a cessation in bombing and fighting throughout Southeast Asia, reality was quite different for those with combat missions to complete. December 24, 1970 arrived with a warm tropical sun dispelling any dreams of a white Christmas. While I knew that the celebration of the birth of God's Son, Jesus, was just hours away, as I prepared for the evening's combat mission, my thought turned to the blessings of God and how I could resolve the moral dilemma of engaging in combat on this most holy day, Christmas. Christmas Eve arrived with the sound of aircraft flying overhead and candlelight church services in the base chapel. As I had during my childhood, I went to the service to sing songs of praise and joy in anticipation of Jesus' birth. I let the candlelight service refresh and praying for peace amongst all nations, and especially in our small, war-torn corner of the world. A Huey helicopter hovered above dispensing snowflakes as it left the chapel in what seemed an unusual prelude to a night when B-52s would rain bombs and death upon an enemy far below. Our mission was not unusual, except we were going into combat on Christmas Eve with a conclusion, death on Christmas Day. We put a reel of Christmas music on the rolling sack tape recorder and sang Christmas songs as we flew towards our IP and fate with the destiny of our Lord's birthday. We interrupted Silent Night to switch reels as required to record the radio transmissions during our bombing mission. We dropped our bombs with knowledge it was Christmas morning, then replaced the mission reel with Christmas music reel and resumed our rendition of Silent Night. The irony of this event did not escape any of us, and we were soon discussing the meaning of killing, even in war, on Christ's birthday. We were not dealing well with the significance of these contrasting events when suddenly the sky was bright as day and the voice of the Lord echoed in our minds, "Be at peace, for today is Christmas, and you just did your job." Today, as we engage in combat once more on Christmas Day, we must remember that the message is one of peace amongst all nations and peoples of the earth. We must set aside economic, political, and social agendas and strive for peace and harmony that was a promise issued so long ago. I pray that understanding will prevail and revenge will be set aside with the dedication to restoring the brotherhood of all peoples on earth. We cannot use only force to settle disputes, but must strive in our actions and our thoughts for peace on earth. To quote one hymn, "Let there be peace on earth, and let it begin with me."
And here we are, how many years later, and they're still out there, you know? I don't know.
Yeah, but, and we're always going to have those stories because our sons and daughters and our grandkids and their grandkids, they're all going to have the same experience.
They are, because people are people, and I guess it's part of life in a way. I wish it wasn't, but it is.
You know, and again, that comes into, you wrote another poem here called "Sometimes I Wish." Sometimes I wish I didn't care and I wasn't observant. Sometimes I wish I just walked through life not seeing a little child with dark circles under her eyes, shrilly, eardrum piercing, screaming, "No!" and hitting and kicking from the bottom of her blissful, sad soul. Sometimes I wish I didn't care, that I didn't see the old couple struggling day by day an itsy-bitsy Social Security check, worrying every minute that someday the plank will fall and someone will take it away. I wish I didn't see the lines of fear and worry on their faces with broken hearts. They say, "Then what happened to us?" Sometimes I wish I didn't know the molested teenager with a self-absorbed parent, marriage in a pot of boiling oil, crying inside, cutting outside, feeling hopelessness without a future. Sometimes I think it would have been simple if I didn't feel, think, see, or hear my neighbor hungry, hurting, starving for something, or someone who says, "It will get better, I promise," with such ardor and belief it sounds believable. Sometimes I believe there aren't even enough seconds in a minute, minutes in an hour, hours in a day, days in a year, years in a lifetime to make a pinprick difference. Sometimes I wish I were as hard as fire-wrought iron nails because I ran into them today and my heart is still aching. Where does this come from, Bonnie?
I don't know, but, you know, it just came one day, and then I really didn't, until you read it, realize it was, you know, that good or poignant, you know? I guess sometimes if you hear somebody else read your stuff, it's, wow. That, I don't know where that came from. I just felt it one day.
And I guess that's part of it is, I mean, the veteran, no matter who is, the police officer, the fireman, and we've got police officers throughout our family, right?
Right.
I mean, you got two sons that are deputy sheriffs.
I know.
Yeah, and they got to work on Thanksgiving, don't they?
Yeah, they do.
You know,
we always, you know, even nursing, though, I mean, since all of us got jobs and everything, we just have to celebrate whenever we can, whichever day we can. It's probably never on the real holiday. And like I told my husband, Gilvin, I said, you know, well, if nobody gets here tomorrow, we'll just go to the church and be with the public that doesn't, you know, they're having a turkey dinner there for people, so we'll just go there and thank God for that, you know.
You know, and then there's how many people don't have any place to go.
Right, and that's why they have this public dinner. And if, but I think somebody will be stopping by, and then we'll be celebrating again on Sunday, so it's not like, but that's the way it is when you have those types of jobs. You give up a lot.
You know, and I think that giving up a lot, what we've talked about before, that closeness of the family. I mean, no matter what, there's always squabbles in families. But at the
right.
end, there's still love that prevails, and that overrides all the squabbles. But, I mean, the time has changed now with everybody getting their own occupation and getting their own families and moving away. I mean, when our parents grew up and everybody, they grew up locally because travel wasn't really that possible. I mean, they didn't have extraordinary, you know, roads and everything and vehicles that travel at high speed and aircraft and everything else. I mean, that's all of our generation.
It is.
And so they stayed all fairly close to home. I mean, you know, when we were growing up and spending time on the farm, we could go from our uncles in one place to all the other ones within 45 minutes to an hour to meet to every member of the family.
Right. And thank God that you came and visited once in a while. Your dad was really, your mom were really good at bringing you back so we could be together.
Yeah, I mean, I grew up with my mom's family, but then we were still always together the summers. And, I mean, the summers I spent up there, you know, just stayed up there. It was just, there's no way to describe the experiences and anything. I think everybody has to have that experience once in their life where they're with their grandparents or their aunts or uncles, not with their immediate family, their parents and their brothers or sisters, but,
right.
you know, engrossed in that other part of life that's so vital and so critical.
My mom's family lived about, I'd say 80, 90 miles away, and we went there several times a year. It was a long ride in those days, though, in those old cars without air conditioning, but, man, we had a closeness there, too, that still is until today. Very, very special.
I don't know where it got lost or what happened, because today, as everybody got their own families and got their educations, travel became possible, and getting a job far away became possible because of communications and opportunities and everything. And so everybody scattered to the winds. And that family support network that I think is so critical, I mean, being a retired psych nurse, you probably know this better than anybody. I mean, the family support and that intimate support network is critical for anything, isn't it?
It is, but, you know, we had people that never, ever got a visitor. That was pretty sad. Or rarely, if they did.
That happens in all generations, doesn't it?
Yeah. Well, I think part of it is the stigma, and then, you know, the mentally ill people just get lost. And sometimes they just didn't have anybody. But then we tried to make up for it when we could.
I mean, both, you know.
This prayer for peace that you wrote, Doug, is really poetic and beautiful. August 27, 2002?
Yeah.
May I read that?
Yeah, go ahead and read it, please.
You know, I'm having trouble with this one eye, so if I see a different line, you'll have to correct me, but God, provide me the wisdom and courage to do what is right for your children on earth. Walk beside me and guide me as I try to do what I perceive is your will. Allow me to see beyond today and into tomorrow so that I may make wise choices and not disturb your master plan. Shield me from harm under the shelter of your grace, but gently rebuke me and pull me back to your teachings if I cause harm. Provide me the gift of vision and wisdom so that I may determine proper courses of action. While all those around me cry for war instead of peace, remind me that the meek shall inherit the earth, and blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the children of God. Please light my path with a rainbow and a sky full of stars, so that even during the darkest hours I may see the illumination of your divine soul, so that I my journey may end with peace and love. For I may need reminding that peace begins with me, and that if peace is to prevail, then I must be a peacemaker and speak out. For although you provide guidance and a path to follow, it is my choice. I pray that you allow me to act with wisdom and faith, faith that allows me to choose and advocate peace, peace for all peoples and nations. I have asked this in your name. Amen. That's a beautiful prayer.
Yeah, thank you. It was just one of those things that happened.
Yeah, and it really comes from deep faith in God and His Son. And, wow, it really tells a lot. It says a lot about you and your faith. I just wanted to share that today because I think it's pretty good, very good, excellent, beautiful, poetic, and all good things.
Yeah, today here's another one, too. I mean, our grandparents came from Norway.
And so yeah.
Our dads were born here in this country, but our grandparents were from Norway. And here's another poem that you wrote, and I just noticed it, too. This is really strange. I can't believe the connection is weird. This is called From the Old Country. He was from the old country, he said, quite evident by his accent. Years ago, he and his wife immigrated to Illinois from a war-torn country. He took his grandson fishing. Several times a day, they caught perch enough for many meals. So we'd ask, where'd you catch the fish? In a lake, he answered, carefully guided in secret. But you come in my boat. We'll go together. We listened while he told of leaving his roots, his family behind. Some already dead from the war and coming here to start a new life, torn from his homeland. I tried to imagine how it felt, but I couldn't. Part of you is always there, he said. And though life is better here, it takes a generation. My kids, they have a better life. Now part of the U.S. of A. Born and raised here, you know. But when I came, I was a threat. I was different. I was backward. I took your jobs. I didn't know the language. It took faith to make it. Belief that eventually it would be better. And after all, you know, God had spared our lives. How could I say anything? I felt a twinge, though, you know, the old saying, home is where the heart is. Hmm. It's applicable today.
I know, to all time, I guess, since way back. The people left and came and tried to make a life, and some did, and then they were very grateful for their new life, but they always missed their home.
You know, there was one unique thing, and again, we talked about this, and I'm not sure why it transpired, but Grandma maybe had this thing. I mean, our grandparents and our dad spoke Norwegian, but Grandma made the conscious choice that we would only hear English, and we would learn English. And today we see all over these other people that are coming here and they're sustaining their language, and that's fine. But that solid integration and that leap forward to where you become one part and parcel, I'm not sure is possible because, I mean, you have to become one with and have the language of and have the culture of to make that transition. But that doesn't mean you forget about the past, I don't think.
No, it shouldn't. I mean, you're always, look at us, we're here, we're talking about when we were young, you know, and it seemed like yesterday, it's gone, but it seems like yesterday. And I don't know, I know my parents, never taught us Norwegian. My husband learned it. He's just a little bit older, but we were to become, you know, Americans. And I do know they talked Norwegian if they didn't want us to know what they were saying, though.
Oh, I remember that more than once, but they did it when they didn't think we were listening or didn't think we were within earshot.
Yeah, I know. And in some ways, I wish we had learned it, but, you know, we didn't, so.
I mean, we picked up Ufta beyond that.
Yeah, we did.
You know, Thanksgiving, and that brings back so many memories and so many things and so many good days, and whether it's the middle of the summer or in the middle of the winter, family togetherness.
And, you know, it's a national holiday that everybody can celebrate. You know, it doesn't really have a religious connotation with it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody should be thankful. And I find out that being thankful is a good thing because that brings you happiness. Happiness doesn't make you thankful. And I know that's true, Doug, because I just read it on Facebook. But actually, it is true. You know, they always say that you can't believe a thing on Facebook, but it is true. If you're thankful, you're happy. And that's why I think Thanksgiving is important. And I know when we had our gatherings when we were young, the feast was incredible.
Yeah, that didn't exist.
I tried to carry it. We haven't made our lefse this year, though. But
you know, we didn't have computers or any of that stuff. We didn't have technology. We didn't, I mean, you know, there was a TV there, but it wasn't focused or concentrated. I mean, we went out and we played. We went out and played in the fields and ran through the woods and jumped in the water. I mean, out the old Mill State Park.
Yes,
I mean, how much fun did we have?
We had a lot of fun. And, like, now this year it's so much like the holidays because we had a snowstorm about 8 inches a couple of days ago. We missed a lot of this that just came that hit the cities. But it's 32 degrees. I figured you'd ask me how cold it was, and it's 32 degrees. So nothing's freezing yet, but I could just see a few flakes coming out on the evergreen trees and in the yard here.
Yeah, don't you have a poem, Snow on Christmas or something?
Yeah, oh, I wonder where it is. You don't have it out there?
No, I don't have it out. Do you have it out?
Yeah, I do, but I have to look through this. Honestly, I just printed so much because I did not know what was going to come, you know? So all kinds of stuff. I didn't realize you've been writing plays. Well, you should be good at that because you are in so many community plays there.
Yeah. Here's another poem that you wrote. I want to smell the perfume. I want to smell the perfume of lilacs in the air. I want to feel the wind blowing softly upon my face and in my hair. I want to feel the sunshine tighten up my skin. I want to feel the raindrops fall and cool me off again. I want to eat an apple from my apple tree and put flowers in a vase to please my company. I want to feel the grass crunch underneath my feet or feel the cool, wet mud soles 2 inches thick. I want to pick a rosebud and watch it reach full bloom. Each year I want to plant a tree to give you back a part of me.
That's me.
Yeah, it is.
Go running barefoot and outside in sun and dancing around and...
You know, I don't know, the people who live in the city don't have that luxury. I mean, I live on a farm now, and, you know, we spent all our lives on a farm, or most of it anyway. And there's something unique about farm life in concentration to city life, I think. I mean, we have to be, I mean, we all learned how to be very independent, very self. I mean, where you could do anything and everything. I mean, what I learned from our, you know, your dad and my dad and what we all learned from our aunts and our uncles, I mean, we can cook up a storm or we can sew up a storm or we can plant a tree.
And give back, you know. Snow for Christmas, I found it.
Okay.
A white Christmas we want, everyone said. The longing for snow increased by the minute because what is Christmas if snow isn't in it? As November passed by with no snow in sight, the wish and the dream remained day and night. Leaves left from the fall raking, dry and brown on the ground. Trees naked and shivering stood all around, except for the evergreens that stood tall and pretty. Green as ever and ever, singing a ditty. We're ready for Christmas and winter and snow. We're ready to put on a theatrical show. December came as nothing happened, no snow. And White Christmas was sung on the car radio. The earth outside remained bare and black, as dull as a burlap 100-pound sack. And children went to bed longing to play in the snow, making snowmen the very next day, longing to make snow angels to sled, ski, and skate, longing for snowballs and snow forts to make, longing for red cheeks and seeing their breath in cold air. Nothing's more fun anywhere, anywhere. And then, just like magic and such, the snow came and was almost too much. It covered the dead leaves and all the dead grass, decorated the evergreens, giving them class, covered the rooftops and fences and driveways and everything else, frontways and sideways. It'll be a white Christmas after all, they said with a smile. It's here to stay and stay for a while. Little kids and big kids and old kids were happy, and Grandma and Grandpa and Mama and Pappy. Hello, Winter said. I'm here to stay for a while. Hunker down and say, stay happy. I want you to smile. There'll be diamonds around you, sparkling with light. I've just decorated the world for you, day and night. Written by me, December 5th, 2013.
That's pretty neat. I mean, you know, besides the poetry, you've written books. I mean, you know, your first book that you wrote was I Am a Woman, I Am a Person. That was an in-depth, how do you describe it? Look at the inside and the soul?
Right. Well, it was about a spiritual journey I had. I really think I had postpartum depression that I never had taken care of. And I realized that, well, I'm in trouble here. And I don't know if I'm going to make it. So I asked me, well, who does counseling around here? We lived up north, and they said, oh, there's this Lutheran pastor in Crookston, and he's really good. Well, he worked with alcoholics at Glenmore there, but you know, it was all meant to be, like everything else. I swear to God, our lives are all put together. And I got on the phone and I called the church, and guess who answered? Pastor Jim Hansen. And I said, he said who he was, and I said, my name is so-and-so, do you do counseling? And he said, yeah. And I had an appointment within a couple of days, and man alive, I've never seen somebody, I mean, it was really something. He took me through some tough times, and he was tough too, you know, because he laid down some ground rules when I came. Like, first, he didn't spend time with people who didn't work at it or weren't serious. And he took all my control away over him when he said, well, I'm not going to charge you anything, but you have to donate to my church so much a week for what I do for you. And so I was pretty much thinking if I didn't, you know, make progress. That's what he said. He didn't spend time with anybody who didn't make progress. I figured he'd throw me out. And it was a really hard time, but the best thing in my whole life that happened to me. He has now passed away, so I can tell who he was. And he was a very, very smart man.
Yeah, we run across
those. He saved my life, and I wrote a poem. I gave this poem to two people when no one cared. I wrote that poem for him. And I got it someplace in here if I can find it. When no one cared, you took me in, that one. And I gave it to him. So, yeah, God, it always seemed like, you know, whenever I was in really bad trouble, there was always somebody that came in and built and helped me out of it, you know?
I think that's the important thing, to reach out to find somebody that can help and accept their help when they offer it, isn't it?
Well, I didn't want him to throw me out, you know, which he pretty much said he'd do.
Yeah, but
and
I mean,
that was tough love, though, because he stuck with me till I got back on my feet. And he saved me from a lot of heartache because I knew that I was in trouble there. And so I wrote that book about my experience. And now I'm finding that people are looking at it. Even our pastor, Cousin David, he took it off the shelf the other day and read it and told me, wow, what a really good story about grace that one was. And it's true.
Here's another poem while you're looking. I'll read this one because it's also applicable right now. Pussy willows. We walked across a frozen black plowed field to reach a woods where pussy willows grow. Then skated as ballerinas on the ice, still frozen on the slough. How thrilled to see this early sign of spring, the trees that yield their soft and flurry blooms. To sound the branches snapping with a ring. Thank goodness, though, the trees were budding no leaves yet. This morning's killing frost had come before its stunted growth, I bet. And then we took the pussy willows home to gently make bouquets, preserving the cherished thoughts in springs and thoughts of coming summer days. I mean, we're just entering winter, but summer days will be back around before we know it.
I know. That's how fast our lives are going by.
Does time fly, or does time change, or is it time in a different perspective, or as we age, do we see time differently than when we were as children?
I think we see it differently, but it does seem to go faster every year.
Is that because we're involved in more things, or because we're not as involved? I don't know. It's
well, I don't know either. I mean, I'm glad it's like that way, though, because otherwise, as we would get older, don't you think it would be awful tough?
Yeah, probably.
If we weren't enjoying life and things like that?
Well, you got to reach out and make life happen, don't you?
Yeah, you do.
I mean, keep alive.
And now even if we get homebound or whatever, as long as we can hear and see, we still can do stuff, you know?
Yeah, I think it's so funny because when we talk, you and I right now are far older than our parents were when you and I were running together as children.
Yeah.
I mean, that is strange to say. Our parents, when they're 40s and 50s, when we were all running, 30s, 40s, 50s, we were running together.
I know.
You know, they'd all be over 100 years old today.
Yeah, I was figuring my dad would be by 106 or something. Well, that's impossible to think that anybody would be here then. You know, not very many do, you know.
That's strange.
Your dad was younger.
Yeah, the I mean, you wrote another book series, too, and this is called Growing Up Margaret, Margaret, Inc. That's kind of Little House on the Prairie type thing, isn't it, up in from northern Minnesota?
It is. It taking place in the 50s. Here's kind of, I was going to look at here. This kind of describes our life there, I think. Making rhubarb sauce. I mean, I was doing this with Harriet, and she thought, boy, that sure explains it all. I got that when no one cared poem out, too, so I can read that. But I got to read Making Rhubarb Sauce. This describes our life there, Doug, and you would recognize this, too. Wooden orange crates were cupboards. A rocker box, a chair in my playhouse under the juneberry and poplar trees. I go there on summer days with my play family and make rhubarb sauce and pies on utensils Mother had thrown out. I cradle my doll in my arms and tell her the secrets of living. I tell her about God. We would go to church with my friend, Coco Anderson. Today I sit in my real house on a landscaped lawn, listening to my churning dishwasher and blaring TV, and I think of playhouses in the woods and imaginary friends named Coco, and I wonder, was I closer to reality then? I had an imaginary friend named Coco Anderson, and I suppose it's because I was so far, you know, much younger than my older siblings, and so I had my own friend. Are you there?
Yeah.
That kind of describes our life a little bit. Yeah, and here's another one I wrote, red and white checkered oilcloth. Mother knew the exact measurements, the same size every time we'd visit the general store to buy new oilcloth for our kitchen table. Myself, I like red and white checkered the best. It made our kitchen look fresh. It's just like a woman to make things look cheerful. There we were praying, come, Lord Jesus, be our guest, and let these gifts to us be blessed, all of us around a checkered oilcloth, far better than linen and lace.
You know, that brings up, I mean, that prayer before we ate was the one we learned as children.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't think about it at that time, but all of us did it, and all of us learned it, because it was inbred in the family. So, I mean, no matter whether we're in Illinois or Virginia or England or Hawaii or Minnesota, it was still there. I know I visited our cousins Marie in England, and I walked into the kitchen, and the kitchen was laid out just like his mom's, her mom's back in Minnesota, just like.
Yeah. Well, when Gilman's sister comes and his cousin used to, they used to always say that same prayer in Norwegian. And it means the same thing, but it was just in Norwegian.
Hmm.
And that was kind of neat. Okay, so I finally found the poem When No One Cared that I wrote then, way back then. When no one cared, when no one cared, you took me in and said, I'll help you walk again. And then you said, here, take my hand and stand on wobbly legs at first, of course, but wobbly legs will get you there. Yes, wobbly legs will get you there. When no one listened, you said, just tell me. Tell me everything. I'll listen. You'll see. I'll hear every word you say and what you don't say, too. Just trust me. I'll listen. When no one thought me worthy, you said, your life's worth saving. Just stick with me. We'll find the life you've lost, and then you can begin again, and then you can begin again. As I take my hand from yours and put it into his, my life will never be the same. Since that day to you I came, since that day you took me in and said, I'll help you walk again. And I wrote that then, and I gave that to him for a gift, sort of, you know?
That was really neat. Here's another one, and this is real brief, but it's neat and goes along with this. You are. You are like moonlight, glistening softly on a quiet lake, a reflection in dark corners of our world.
You know,
where is this coming from, Bonnie?
I don't know, but it's a gift, I guess, and if I write it down, and I should really get busy and do some more. I'm going to this winter. I'm going to get back to the writing now that we've lived here a year and things will settle down a little, you know. I like to do more, and if someday, maybe someday it'll become something, but just because I haven't had the time to really send it out and try to get things going and published and on bestseller lists, I just keep doing it anyway because someday somebody will use it, you know, hopefully my grandsons, you know.
Yeah, it's kind of neat. You got another poem here, and this is kind of good because it feels good whether you're family or friends. I mean, each of us has a best friend that we've been throughout our lives, and we've shared and hopes and dreams and cried with and held and everything else. Ah, my friend, all I have to do is think of a hug from you, and my day is made. I feel better already, for what is a friend but a touch, a word, a look that lifts my spirit, soaring to heights way beyond human expectations, surpassing horizons of loveliness and moonbeams and sunshine and rainbows and mud puddles from the gentle rainfall we just had.
Do you remember how good that felt when we were young after rain? It seemed like the sun would come out again, and then it would just feel so good in the country there.
You know, I remember one thing we did. I mean, there was one year, and I remember my sister with your older brother, and we had a tornado chasing us across the field.
Really? That wasn't fun.
That not exactly.
I'm scared of those things. I don't know. You know, I'm glad I live as far north as I do because they're not so often around here. But, man, they're destructive when they hit, you know.
Where do we go from here? I mean, we've shared a lot of your poetry and talked about some of your books and everything else and how it's all come about. I mean, how does one get started? I mean, they just got to sit down and start thinking, to start writing.
Yeah, you do. You. It comes from within and just start thinking. Okay, and write about things you know. Don't write about things you don't know, because if you want to write creatively like this, if you want to do more of a professional thing, you have to go do the research and then, you know, come to a conclusion or whatever. But I don't know. You just have to think of where you were, what you did, what your feelings were, what happened. I try to put something good in everything I write. You know, I don't want to leave people in the darkness because... But I write about things I know and things that I remembered. And we were so far out in the country that I saw a lot of things that I guess I kept in my heart till I got older, because I would walk out in nature all the time and see a lot of things. And it was kind of, you can do that because you have some already. I mean, share yourself. You know, like that prayer is very poetic that I read of yours. And that story about Nam, that is a good story, and it tells something about people, and you've described your feelings, and it runs along smoothly, and so you have a lot of experiences that you could share.
You know,
you could write a short story on many of the things that you've experienced, I'm sure.
Yeah, the frustration is always there. It comes and goes day by day, because I think one of the things overall, and this goes back to the prayers or the hopes or the dreams, I see in the military and those around, the politicians just disregarding and avoiding the reality of the health and environmental effects of war and the environmental pollution. And then myself and all the others, there are many that I know and we've met that speak up and stand trying to do something, but they kind of become persona non grata because people don't want to recognize what's happened and make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
very difficult. You get another story here, and this is we're just heading in winter. Winter, soft falling snowflakes, gentle wisps of softly tickle my face, my nose, and my cheeks. Street lights adorn you as you lie upon the ground. They make you sparkle like diamonds and shine as stars and heavens in a clear night. Because of you, heaven and earth glow, wrapped in winter's beauty.
I guess you could tell I don't mind winter, huh?
Yeah, well, at the same time, I mean, the next thing you got an alfalfa for you.
Yeah.
I mean, in haying time, I wasn't much for pitching hay, so I rode the rake, and when it was full, I'd trip it. The mown hay had a sweet, infinite scent that I love. Sometimes I wish we were making rounds in alfalfa fields again, watching the sweep rake come, sweep up the hay, and pile it on the haystack. How many times did we jump in that haystack?
Yeah. Well, you know, and there were horses in those days, too, and everybody just, you're that old that you had horses? Well, I came at the end of them, but I can remember that the horses were used in those days when I was very, very young. Okay, today, this is how you can do it, and it impressed me so much that I just have to tell you about it, and I could not get the words for it, but it was... I was watching ABC this morning, and is it Good Morning America or the Today Show? One, I can't remember what's on, but there was a group on called American Young. It was a duo, a man and a woman. And the name of the song was Soldier's Wife, Don't Want You to Go. And if that isn't heart-wrenching, I don't know. But it's the night before he's leaving for war, or leaving, and... they don't want to think about saying goodbye or having to go, and she's drying tears, and she doesn't want to think about what's going to happen when the sun comes up and the fire goes out, and so it's just let's drink a little more wine to make the night go slower. All I have is you, and you are all I need, and that she knows this is part of being a good soldier's wife. But at least she has tonight. You got to go on YouTube and find that. It's called Soldier's Wife Don't Want to Go by American Young, and you can hear it because it's on there now. Man, the sacrifices people make, you know?
Yeah, and sometimes they don't understand what they are, and we don't understand what they are. But I think the other thing comes back into, and we hear it day in and day out, and I struggle with it, is how do you get medical care? How does that veteran get medical care? How does that affected family member get medical care? Because too often they just want to deny that it happened, and I had that happen to me again in the last 24 hours with just horrific consequences.
Well, that was quite the song, Doug. You would really, really like it. And, I mean, it tells that there's how you tell a tale. That's how you write a poem, you know, about your life. And whoever wrote that song knew exactly what they were talking about, you know, and put it down on paper. And people, I'm sure that's going to go really, really far.
You know, there's a sense of peace and tranquility that comes from writing, whether I'm sitting down and writing or I go through all of the books and everything that you've written, the poetry you've done.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I wait for the peace and tranquility that you yourself get from doing it.
Mm-hmm.
But when I sit here and read them myself, it puts me into a peaceful notion or a happy notion. And I mean, right now it's raining and it's dreary and it's cold and winter's setting in and Thanksgiving's tomorrow and things don't feel real good.
Mm-hmm.
But the peace and tranquility is just around the corner, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. So I would just take my little computer out and start typing. Put your thoughts down. You could always correct it later.
You know, the old day of a handwritten note or the typewriter is gone, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, it's sure a lot easier to work on a computer where you can get it out of there so fast, because if you made a mistake when you were so busy with typewriter, oh, man, what a mess. You might even have to start over again and do the whole thing. And that was such a hard thing to do. And then you did everything by longhand first, you know?
You know, I think with all the times that passed for you and I personally, I mean, when we go back to the family stories, our grandma and grandpa came on a wagon train. I mean, mm-hmm. a horse and wagon in northern Minnesota.
Yeah.
I mean, took the train as far as they could, and then they had to go by horse and wagon.
Right.
And our grandma lived to see man set foot on the moon, because when I talked to her right after man had set foot on the moon, after I came back from Vietnam for the first time, for her and her mindset, it was astonishing in her lifetime to where all they had was horse and buggy
mm-hmm.
to see man walk on the moon. I mean, you were right there with her at the end. I mean...
Yeah, she lived a long time, too.
She was, 92 or 93.
Did. Yeah. And long, old age. They lived to an old, good old, ripe old age.
Well, I think that had a lot to do with, you know, it was all good, fresh foods and raised on a farm, and you had fresh air and you were taken care of. And
worked
hard.
Yeah,
I mean, you had struggles and things, but it was all people working together.
Uh-oh,
well, Bonnie, we're at the end of the radio
sign.
Program. God bless you. Thank you. Thank you for being in my life since before I was born, Bonnie.
Well, thank you, too, and have a wonderful Thanksgiving, Christmas, and happy holidays.
Okay, thank you. God bless you. I love
God
you.
God bless you. Bye.